Ensemble for singing this evening. What a joy it is still, the cross, and I praise the Lord for that. Well, it's been a real joy, and I hope that the night will not slip away from you until you've gotten to meet these good folks that we have with us. But just to meet the Prater family and the Morris family and Brother Ninen, he's here without his family. They had to stay home on this trip just because it didn't work out for them to travel with him, but his family back home. But it's just been a real joy of mine to get to fellowship with them, get to know them, and I trust that if you've not yet done that, now they'll all leave tomorrow, and I trust that after the service tonight, you can slip over to the Family Life Center for just a little while and get to know them, get a prayer card, get to know a little bit about them so you can intelligently pray for them, as Brother Godfrey mentioned this morning, pray for their family and pray for the struggles and the issues and the joys and the good things and the bad that they'll go through, and for us just to be standing behind them. I challenge you to do that, but it's been a joy just to get to meet all of them, and one of the joys has been to get to have Brother Godfrey and Miss Linda Godfrey here with us, and they've been a real blessing to us as well, and they aren't strangers necessarily to the area, but it's been a good while, and quickly became favorites of ours, and so we're so thankful that they saw fit to cut out time of their schedule to be with us and to bless us in the service and the messages. And so we're excited to hear him tonight, and so it's just been a joy. Hopefully you'll get to meet him after the service as well. So Brother Godfrey, I'm going to ask you to come on, and so I know that some of you are thinking, well, if you just tell us a few more stories, then we can go home and feel good about ourselves. So he said he had more, and they said that this morning, but apart from the story, he's just a wonderful, wonderful servant of the Lord. And my heart has been blessed, Brother Godfrey. I'm not just filling in time here. I really mean this. I've been blessed and just joyed to have you here with us. Thank you. Preach for us again.
Thank you. It's our pleasure. Would you open your Bibles to the Gospel of Matthew chapter 26 and the first verse. But just open it if you would. And I'm going to tell you a story first. But find it and put a piece of paper, leave your finger there, however you do it. Just open it up. You know, that's already great. Preacher, over $200,000 already, and I'm sure you're going to have more come in. Hey, that's just a miracle. Yeah. It's great to be in a church that has that burden. Is it worth all that? I mean, is it worth the giving and the praying and the encouraging? Well, let me tell you, it is, obviously, 10,000 times over. But let me tell you one reason why. Back in the 19-teens, somewhere back around 1915 or 16, a young American couple graduated from Moody Bible Institute, Anton and Viola Anderson. You probably never heard that name before in your lives. God called them to Africa, and they were going to catch a ship leaving from New York to go down to the southern part of Africa, and something happened, and they were late, and they missed that ship, and that ship left, but it was sunk by the Germans. Short time later, they got on another ship, headed that down south, down the Atlantic, and it had 30,000 gallons of gasoline in the ship, and it caught on fire. And they had to go to Brazil and have the ship repaired. But they finally, after many weeks, made it to the southern part of Africa in 1917. And they, after some months and actually a couple of years, they trekked up the eastern side. You have to remember, people didn't have a nice car. It was rough. You didn't go anywhere there easily. But they worked their way up, and they came across, and in 1920, they arrived in this little village out in the middle of nowhere in the Belgian Congo. The village is named Chene, and I mentioned to you this morning, they got there. People there had never seen a white person, never heard anything about Jesus Christ. And, of course, they had learned the language, and they started preaching and teaching. And God did a work, and they prayed a big prayer, and they said, "Dear Lord, please help us. We ask you to help us see 10,000 people come to know you before Jesus comes back or we go to heaven." Well, they worked there through the 20s and the 30s and the 40s. In 1956, that man, Anton Anderson, died in that village. Now, we're talking about folk, leopards, wild animals, hippopotamus, crocodiles, wildest country you can imagine, leprosy, just all of that. That man died in 1956. When he died, they had gone over 10,000 people who had come to know Christ. They had his funeral out in this little village in the middle of nowhere. The American Embassy sent an observer up there with an old-fashioned people counter, a clicker, and he counted over 6,000 people that came to that missionary's funeral out in the middle of nowhere. Well, of course, by that time, the Andersons had children. They buried three of their little children. If you go down the mountain now from where they lived in that village, you walk down a mountain a mile and two-tenths, 2 kilometers, and there are four graves down there. The missionary and three of their little kids they buried out there. Now, I got to change that story because I was back some time ago, and now there are 9 more graves beside those graves. And those are graves of African pastors. I'm just saying, is it worth it? I mean, here they went out there and they went through some rough times, but they saw thousands of people saved. They trained local people. Well, in 1960, he died in 56. His son, Fred Anderson, Fred's wife, and Mrs. Anderson and some others, a lady named Martha Kernberger, who's a dear friend to Linda and me, we were with her last year when she went to heaven, 93 years old. 1960, they got chased out of the Congo. Anybody remember back there, they had to send in the Marines to rescue people, and a lot of missionaries were killed. And for 30 years, there were no missionaries out there in that part of the world. Well, we were working up in Senegal, and we were asked, "Would you pray about going down there?" And I went with a group of young people, and God led us down there. And there's a reason I'm telling you this story, folks. We went back there in that area 30 years later. And in that area, I'm talking about a 50-mile area out in this mountains and jungle, and again, no electricity, no running, none of that. We went back out there, and here's what we found. There were 12 churches that would run 800 or 900 people or 1,000 people every Sunday. Every one of those churches had village churches, 10 or 12 village churches. None of them had pastors. A lot of those older pastors, two of the big churches, their pastors had died. They didn't have any pastors. And they're just begging me, "Please, would you come down here and start teach us the Bible?" And I was going out. They about worked me to death. I mean, I was just going out all over the place into brand new areas preaching the gospel with them. Well, that's a wonderful story. But we got caught up in fighting 90, 91, 92, 93. In 93, we were evacuated out, Linda and the kids. The American Embassy called me one day, said, "Have your kids in the morning at Ediofa." It's a little town, near village, it's not a town. Little village nearby that had a landing strip, just a dirt landing strip. Little single engine plane came in. And they had a sick man. They had to fly out. So Linda and my three younger kids got on that plane. I was standing there with all their suitcases. They're not a place, not for one suitcase. So they leave. I'm there with all their clothes and the Becca books from homeschooling. And they left. I had no way of knowing, did they make it out? They don't know where I'm at. And I stayed there. I hid out in the jungle and stayed another period of time. So we had to leave in 1993, and I didn't get to go back there to that place until just a few years ago. Now, I know this is a long story, but look, if you don't get my sermon, you need to listen to my stories, because I'm not just doing this to tell a story. I want you to know what God did there and what he's doing around the world. I went back. Brother Eric Bowman, our young African director, went with me. He was supposed to be my bodyguard. It ended up being the other way around. But anyway, we went out there, and it takes you a couple of days to fly, and then it's another 2 days and two nights of riding. We were in this old Toyota Land Cruiser, and we rode, and just 2 days, you can't hardly get out. I was sick. I didn't know it. I thought I had something else. Ended up, when I came back, found out I had a half-inch kidney stone. In this side here, to another kid. Anyway, we were riding along 2 days and two nights. And that second night, it was dark, and we were getting fairly close to where we used to live. But it's mountains, and all of a sudden, I started hearing a noise. And I said to Pastor Mukelku, the African pastor that I used to work with, I said, "Pastor, what is that noise?" And he said, "Pastor Jonas, they know you're coming." And we would drive in the night, no lights. We would drive into this village down a dirt road, and Christians would be lined up down both sides of the road with palm fronds, singing hymns. And they would, oh man, we would stop, and I would have to get out, and everybody would come, and I would talk with them, and have a word of prayer with them, and we'd love on each other. And then I'd get back in the vehicle, and we'd go to the next village, and it was the same thing. And I don't know how many villages we stopped at. And finally, we got where we used to live. You go down a mountain, cross a river, and going up the other side in four-wheel drive in the sand, churning along about 2 or 3 miles an hour. Halfway up that mountain, the folk from our village were waiting. And as we went up, they started following in behind that vehicle and following us and singing hymns. And people gathering in the dark. It was late. And they brought out a couple of chairs, and we waited till they all gathered. And they wouldn't have, but I had to get up and talk with them and preach, you know, give them a little something. And we stayed in a mud house that night. And people were coming up to me, and they were saying, "Pastor, you want me to Christ? Pastor, you baptized me down there in the pond." I love the way we did it there. Maybe you can learn from this. We baptized three people at a time. We'd wait out in the pond, and the deacons would bring us three short people, and we'd baptize them. Then we'd take a step deeper water, and they'd bring us three a little taller. And they just, that's the way we'd separate them. And so if you were tall, you were one of the last bunch. But anyway, we'd baptize 35, 40, 40, sometimes 50 people there in those ponds and rivers. But the next day, I was showing Brother Bowman around, and we're walking around the village, and they live in these thatch huts, and they would say, Pastor Jonas, come over here. Now look, folk, I haven't been back there in 20 years. Come over here. You got to meet my family. This is our daughter, Bonita. Now, I didn't tell you already. We had three kids that lived there with us, Bonita, Lydia, and Robert. And we'd go to one house, "Pastor, come over here. This is our daughter. This is Bonita, our daughter." We'd go to another place, "Pastor, you got to meet this is our daughter, Lydia. Pastor, come over here. This is our son, Robert." There are dozens and dozens of little African kids out in the middle of nowhere in the Congo named Bonita, Lydia, and Robert. And you know what that does to the heart of a missionary? When you go back to some place where God let you go and you see people get saved. And anyway, I just wanted you to... I get long-winded sometimes because I've got so many. I just love to tell you about Senegal, love to tell you more about out there. But I want you to look with me tonight. This will be a very serious sermon. I think all my sermons are serious, but this one When you think Matthew 26, I mean, is that a chapter that you would think about missions? Probably not. Now, I preach about the Great Commission, and I preach Romans 1, 8, and I preach Romans chapter 10 and 2 Corinthians 5 and a lot of other mission passages, but I believe all the Bible's missionary. And I'm going to read the first 16 verses, so just follow along if you would in Matthew 26. And it came to pass when Jesus had finished all these sayings, he said unto his disciples, you know that after 2 days is the feast of the Passover, and the Son of Man is betrayed to be crucified. Then assembled together the chief priests and the scribes and the elders of the people unto the palace of the high priest, who was called Caiaphas, and they consulted that they might take Jesus by subtlety and kill him. But they said, not on the feast day, lest there be an uproar among the people. Now when Jesus was in Bethany, in the house of Simon the leper, there came unto him a woman, having an alabaster box of very precious ointment, poured it on his head, as he sat at meat. When his disciples saw it, they had indignation, saying, to what purpose is this waste? For this ointment might have been sold for much and given to the poor. When Jesus understood it, he said unto them, why trouble ye the woman? For she hath wrought a good work upon me. For ye have the poor always with you, but me ye have not always. For in that she hath poured this ointment on my body, she did it for my burial. Now, verse 13 is not my sermon for tonight, but even notice here, verily I say unto you, wheresoever this gospel shall be preached in the whole world. You see, before Jesus was crucified, he already knew the gospel was going to be taken out all over the world. And then shall also this that this woman hath done be told for a memorial of her. Now that's a great story, and that will be my theme here in just a moment. But when you come to verse 14, I read it. And these next two verses, honestly, folks, they always shock me just a little bit. Because you just read this wonderful story of what this woman did. But then one of the 12, called Judas Iscariot, went unto the chief priest and said unto them, what will you give me, and I will deliver him unto you? And they coveted with him for 30 pieces of silver, and from that time he sought opportunity to betray him. My message tonight will be a little different. This morning I had four points for you. Tonight, this is not even a homiletically correct message. My predecessor is Far East Director at BIMI. According to him, you had to have 3 points at least. I just have 1 point tonight. Seriously, I just have 1 point in my message. I don't have a fancy outline about it. There's just a thought I want you to get from this passage. You know, when you read Matthew chapter 26 and 27, have you done that lately? Hadn't been too long ago. I read them. You kind of want to tread softly and reverently, because what you're going to read about in chapter 26, I didn't read all the chapter 27, but in those chapters you read about the institution of the Lord's Supper table, the Garden of Gethsemane, the betrayal of Christ, the trial, the crucifixion, and the grave. And I don't know about you, but in my life, Lynn and I have been saved a long time. We've been serving the Lord together for a long time. But there are times in my life where I've gotten a little bit cold-hearted and not where I wanted to be. Does that ever happen to you? But let me tell you what I found will help me when nothing else will. I come back and open my Bible and I reread the story of the crucifixion. It stirs my heart when I think what he did for me, what he did for you. Well, it said Jesus had finished all these sayings. He knew that his crucifixion was coming. He had clearly told them, in fact, he tells them here in verse 2, that they were going to Jerusalem and he was going to be arrested and abused, and they were going to spit on him and he was going to be crucified. And the Jewish leaders here in this passage were meeting together plotting to do that very thing, that is to crucify him. But in this passage, and where I'm going to get in just, I'm headed there just in a moment, I'm going to talk about this little story here of this woman who came into that house, Simon the leper's house. Interesting story. Now, if you really want some other details, go back and read Mark chapter 14 and John chapter 12, and it will give you some details you don't read here. One is you'll find it tells you who this woman is. Now, here in Mark, it doesn't give her name, but this was Mary, the sister of Martha and Lazarus. And they were there, of course, a few days before that, Lazarus had died. You remember that story, John chapter 11? Lazarus had died. Jesus brought him back to life. He was there. That's enough to attract a crowd. So in that house, Simon the leper's house, there was a group of people meeting a few days before the Passover. Martha was there. Now, we preachers tend to, we just kind of beat up on Martha all the time. Mary was sitting at the feet of Jesus, and Martha was in the kitchen getting supper ready. But honestly, guys, you missionaries, wouldn't you agree with me? Boy, how we thank God for ladies in independent Baptist churches that like to prepare supper for the missionaries. So let's not be too hard on Martha. Lazarus was there. Mary comes in with this special gift she had. The Bible tells us it cost 300 pence. 300 pence, the average worker in that day worked all day long for a pence. Think about that. This gift that she was going to give Jesus was almost a year's labor when you knock off the weekends and things like that. It was a big gift. And in that home, that day, there was at least 17 people. There was Jesus, of course, and Simon the leper was his house, and Mary, Martha, Lazarus, and the 12 disciples. So there was a fair-sized group, maybe more than that, we don't know. And again, I'm headed to that, but let me give you a thought on either side of it. Have you ever thought about this? Here's one of the most beautiful stories in all the Bible of this woman and how much she loved Jesus. But before you get there, the first five verses is a story of fear and jealousy and hatred. Because religion, now listen to me, religion hates Jesus Christ. Our salvation by faith in the complete work of Jesus is the opposite of religion. Religion goes around, look at me. I mean, I pray more than you pray. I can sing better than you. No, I can't either. Okay, whatever. I give more than you give. I go so, you know, whatever. That's religion. Look at me. When you're really saved, you say, don't look at me, look at him. And you have a fear. The religious leaders, they were afraid of Jesus. They were jealous. They couldn't stand him, hated him. And then on the other side, verses 14, 15, 16, man, it's almost worse. Because one of his own, full of treachery and bargain driving, what will you give me? And I will deliver him unto you. But isn't it just like the Bible that between fear and jealousy and hatred and treachery, the Holy Spirit gave us one of the sweetest stories in all of the Bible. It's like a rose among thorns, an island of love in a sea of hate. And that day in that house, as that group met, there were three key people. There were people there, but there were three key people we're going to see in this story. And those people were Mary and Judas and Jesus. Now, Jesus had told all of them, we're going to Jerusalem. I'm going to be captured, mistreated, crucified. The disciples, Jesus, by the way, told them that multiple times. The disciples didn't get it. Oh, no, Lord, that can't happen to you. We don't want that. And they just could not wrap their minds around the fact that Jesus was going to die. They loved him. They didn't want him to die. But it's interesting that two people didn't understand it. One of them was a woman. Now, hang on, ladies, listen. And Pastor, aren't you glad? Well, lastly, aren't you glad for godly, spiritual-minded women who love the Lord with all their hearts? And the disciples of Christ didn't understand, but there was a woman that did. You know how I know that? If you just followed those verses, you should know it. I know that because when she came and poured this ointment on his body, she did it because she understood he was going to be crucified. She did it for his burial. And Mary thought, if he's going to die, he's not going to die till I show him how much I love him. And there was somebody else who understood it. And that was Judas. And Judas said, not only do I understand it, I'm going to help it happen. That's shocking. And if Mary followed him with a heart full of love, Judas had a hate that merged everything in his life in death. Now I want you to look. You cannot find probably a greater contrast in the Bible than between these two people, a man and a woman, Mary and Judas, a friend and a foe. One of them said, "What can I do for Jesus?" Wouldn't it be wonderful if all of us would live that way? "Lord, what do you want me to do for you?" Christ-centered. If we could just some way keep our minds Christ-centered. It's not about me. It's not about you. It's really not about us, even as a local church. As important as that is, it's about pointing people to Him. And there was another one who said, "What can Jesus do for me?" Self-centered. But can I just park here just a second? My problem with the modern-day phenomenon of prosperity religion, you know what I'm talking about? Listen to that guy on TV and put your hand on the TV and send him a gift and you'll never be sick and drive a Cadillac and live in a mansion. Folks, that's straight out of the pit of hell. There is nowhere in the Bible where you get such garbage as that. In fact, some of God's greatest saints went through the fire and the floods, and read the book of Job and read the Gospels. And here was this man that said, "What can Jesus do for me?" One of them has a heart of devotion, the other a heart of deceit. One of them a heart of sacrifice, the other one a heart of selfishness. And he sold out his Lord for 30 pieces of silver. My sermon tonight, it's not about Judas, but there is a lesson here. I'll just mention it in passing. You can be in church and be of the group and be going through, playing the little games and not belong to Him. I mean, Judas walked every mile. He was right there with everything they did. Judas was there. And Judas thought, "What can I get out of Jesus?" Now look, lust always wants to get. By the way, lust is not just immorality. Lust is, what can I get out of it? What's my advantage? It wants to get. Judas carried the bag, meant he was the treasurer of the group. I mean, they argued about, why did you waste that perfume? We could have sold it and given the money to the poor. How many of you think Judas was concerned about the poor? Do you know who Judas was concerned about? Judas. And that's probably, you couldn't find a better example of selfishness and lust in all the Bible. Now watch this. When you get a person like that, that has a heart full of bitterness and lust and wanting to get for themselves, they'll look at you and think you've lost your mind. Judas looked at Mary and all he looked at it with a heart of sordid selfishness. In fact, Judas, he extracted poison from Mary's flask of perfume. How many of you, you don't need to raise your hand, rhetorical question, but how many of you, when you got saved, not everybody loved you anymore? How many of you, when you really got to know Christ, your family didn't understand you? Your best friends may have turned their backs upon you. My grandmother reared me, and I called her Mama, actually. And I love her today. She's in heaven now. But when Linda and I, we became independent Baptists by conviction. We didn't grow up in it. We're in a Baptist church, but it wasn't independent Baptist. And when we got married, I just got out of the Marine Corps, we joined an independent Baptist church. And my grandmother who reared me, she got so upset. She said, "JB, you can't be buried in a cemetery now." I said, "Mommy, it doesn't matter. Just put me in a pine box in the woods. Jesus is coming back. When he comes back, I'm going up anyway. It doesn't matter. That cemetery's been full for years." But when you get somebody that's full of selfishness, they'll look at what you do in love and they don't understand it. But here's my thought tonight. Boy, for what I just said about having one point, I can think of a lot of things, can't I? Here's my thought tonight. From a single action done by a sinful woman, Jesus drew a wealth of meaning. This Mary, now, you know, there are a lot of Marys in the New Testament. Actually, not in the Bible. But in the New Testament, you've got Mary, the mother of Jesus. You've got Mary Magdalene. But this Mary, who is a sister to Martha and Lazarus, you see her three times in the Gospels. Now, I know the kind of church I'm in, so you can answer this question. You can answer it out loud. I don't mind. Every time you see this woman, she's in the same place or same position every time you see her. Somebody tell me what it is. Every time you see her, she's at his feet. Jesus was in their home. I think Jesus loved these people dearly. See, we missionaries travel. We stay in people's homes and we become friends with them. And I was one of the first churches I ever raised support in. Why, I don't know. I'm a South Carolina boy. But I raised a lot of support on the south side of Chicago. Where I started out, I don't know why. I had to have an interpreter sometimes up there. But I was back there in this same church many years later. And this little lady came up to me. Mrs. Irene Pizer, I'll just tell you who she was. Mrs. Pizer came up to me. They had supported me for years. She said, "Brother Godfrey, can I tell you something?" I said, "Well, sure, Mrs. Pizer." She said, "The first time you ever preached here, I promised God I would pray for you every day." And this was 16 years later. She said, "Brother Godfrey, I kept my promise." You know what I did? I couldn't even say thank you. I stood there and blubbered like a baby. And Jesus stayed in this home with his family. And Martha was in the kitchen cooking, but Mary was sitting at his feet, soaking in his words, his teaching, his person. Next time you see her is in John chapter 11 when Lazarus had died. And Martha was there when Jesus arrived. And then later Mary came out. And when she came out, a lot of the mourners followed her. And she fell at his feet. And the mourners thought she'd come out to mourn, but she came out to worship Jesus. And then in this story, the third time we see her. Now, I just said a moment ago, lust wants to get. In fact, if I had to give a title to my sermon tonight, it would be this. Are you a giver or are you a getter? Are you someone who rejoices in giving or someone that you're just wanting to get? Lust always wants to get. But watch this. Love always wants to give. Mary's heart was this: what can I give to Jesus? It was not, what do I have to give? You can't read this story and not see her heart. Lord, is it all right if I sacrifice to you? Lord, I don't even know how to express how much I love you. Can you picture her just a few moments before this story, walking into her bedroom and reaching up on that shelf and pulling down the most precious thing she has, an alabaster box full of expensive perfume, and pulling it down and taking it in that room and breaking it and anointing the body of our Lord she puts some on his feet, and she's down on her knees and she's wiping his feet with her hair. Here's what I see in this story. Mary speaks to us of the extravagance of love. I'm going to give him the best that I have. And real love never says, how much do I have to do this year? I know that preacher. We're going to go to mission conference and he's going to say, you need to give more. Well, look, your preacher may say that, but if he does, he's trying to encourage you to do what Mary did and give him the best that you have. Real love, you know, have you ever tried to write a definition? Have you ever read one in the dictionary? You know what a dictionary is? I don't guess people know. Encyclopedias, not, that's all. You got to go to Google now, but what? Anyway, have you ever tried to define love? You don't go to Walmart and say, I want 5 pounds of love. Because really, love is not so much about sentiment, it's more about service. Love is way more than emotions. Now, sometimes it's emotions. It's part of love, but a lot of time, don't raise your hands. But how many of you men, you haven't always felt a great amount of emotional love for your wife when you get up early in the morning anyway, I'll just leave that right there. It may be the other way around. It's probably more the other way around. Love has a lot more to do with what you do, service, than how you feel. Because sometimes, look, I had COVID. 2 weeks, I didn't feel loving. She didn't want around me. I had a fever. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't even eat. You know, most people lose their taste and their smell. I didn't lose mine. Mine got exaggerated. If it had a drop of salt in it, I could not. Oh, it would gag me. If it had sugar in it, it was so super sweet, I could not eat it. I didn't feel too loving for 2 weeks. But, you know, I never once doubted that she loves me and she knows that I love her. Love's a lot more about service than it is sentiment. You see, it's possible, and you've heard this said before. Amy Carmichael said it. I don't know if she's the first one. But it's possible to give without loving. You ever give to a person, a street person, a homeless person? You can give to them and not love that person at all. But it's impossible to really love somebody without giving. And here in this story, real love, when it's given to the uttermost limits, still feels like the gift is too small. I love to read. Linda does too. Our kids grew up. We lived out in the Sahara. Everything shut down about noon every day until 3 or 4 o'clock. Nobody moved. It was so hot. So we read. But I was reading a book called The Story of Henry Frost and China Inland Mission in North America. A lot of people don't know that a lot of China, missionaries to China came out of America. And Hudson Taylor had crossed the Northeast U.S. and as he did that, God spoke to the hearts of several young people. One of them, her name was Susie Parker. Her dad was a farmer up in Pennsylvania and her mother had already gone to heaven. And the story that in the book was about the service they were having in this church. It was the going away service for Susie Parker. She was getting ready to leave with a group to go to China. And a lot of their friends were there and her daddy was there and their church people were there and they were having this service. And the pastor had asked Susie Parker's father if he had anything he would like to say. And her father, who was just a farmer up there, he stood up and he said, "Folk, look, I can't speak. I am not a public speaker. All I want to say is this. Nothing I have is too precious for my Jesus." And he gave the greatest gift he had, his only daughter. Well, Susie Parker and a group of young people got on train. They crossed America. They entered a ship on the Pacific coast and headed out to China, and some weeks had gone by. And then, of course, in those days, can anybody remember living without smartphones and computers? And man, I'd love to go back to that, but it's too late, can't go back. But in those days, they didn't have all that. The ship left the West Coast, headed to China. It got over in the North China Sea, and there was a storm, and that ship went down. And a few weeks later, in the same church, many of the same people, same pastor, her father, at the end of the funeral, the pastor said, "Is there anyone who has anything they would like to say?" And Susie Parker's father stood back up and he said, "Folk, what I want to say is this, the same thing that I said when she went away, nothing I have is too precious for my Jesus." Now let me give you the Godfrey definition of sacrifice, okay? Now we don't like to use it. You know, missionaries, we don't think about sacrificing, do we? I mean, we love what we do. We love to go. But look, sacrifice is a good Bible term. Romans 12:1, present your bodies what? A living sacrifice. Let me give you the Godfrey definition of sacrifice. I believe that sacrifice is the joy of giving the best that we have to the one that we love the most. Do you really love someone? Hey, men, don't raise your hand. But how many of you men have ever bought your wife a birthday gift or a Valentine's Day gift or a Christmas gift and you wrap it all up and the moment you give that to your wife, it looks pretty small. I mean, it just really doesn't say what you want to say to her of how much. How can you tell someone that you've lived with for over 50 years, what can you give? And sometimes when you look at that gift, it doesn't seem like much, but when you really love someone, it's not hard to do something for them. And anything we thought they needed or wanted or we could do, we would do it. Why? Because we love them. Linda and I, we're not so old, we're just high mileage, okay? We've been around a long time. About 14 years ago, has it been that long? 14 years ago, we were out. I was preaching out in Seattle, Washington. And she started blinking. She couldn't keep her eyes open. And we'd go out in the sun, and her eyes would just lock down because she couldn't open them. And we came back home and took her to an ophthalmologist, and he thought, well, maybe it's an allergic reaction, and it got worse instead of better. And they sent us to a neurologist 14 years ago. And the moment we walked into that neurologist's office, the lady's doctor said, I know exactly what you have. It's called blepharospasms. Blepharo, Greek for eyelid. And whatever part of your brain tells your eyes to blink, in her case, it sends the wrong signal. And she has a severe case of it. For three years, she could not open her eyes. Now, I'm telling you this to say, did you know that she followed me all over the world? She would hold my elbow and go to China and the Philippines and the churches, and I would take her to a church like this and find her a seat. And once I took her to that seat, she could pull it apart a little bit. It wasn't her vision. And they started giving her, that was back then, they started giving her 24 injections, 24 shots, every 3 months for 14 years. She gets 12 shots around each of her eyes in the muscles to keep her brain says to close, but as long as she gets them, she can open her eyes now. But I'm just saying, folks, when you really love somebody, it's easy to do things for them. Have you ever watched two lovers try to say goodnight? I don't mean goodnight, not that kind. I mean, have you ever watched two lovers try to say goodnight? It takes 30 minutes, an hour. We got to the Congo in 1990 and fighting started, and we got cut off from the world. And 10,000 foreigners fled the country. We had just gotten there. I just didn't feel, they had been praying for missionaries to come back 30 years. I didn't feel like I could leave. And I called Linda and the three kids, and I said, look, it's dangerous here. There's fighting everywhere. Look, why don't y'all go back to America, and when things settle down, I'll let you know and y'all can come back. And she and the kids said to me, if God wants you here, God wants us here. I'm just simply saying, look, folk, when you really love someone, now the story tonight is this. Mary loved Jesus with all of her heart. And she said, he's not going to die till I show him how much I love him. Now, my sermon's almost finished, but there's one point I just want to point out. This might be, some people would wonder why I would even share it, but it's so true. Have you ever noticed that the real lovers of Jesus are most often misunderstood? Three times you see her at the feet of Jesus. Every time somebody's misunderstanding her. First time it was her own sister. My mother, she's in heaven too. My mother never tried to keep us from going to the mission field. She was for us. But we spent 20 years on the field, and we ended up coming back. And I pastored down in South Carolina. If you get on I-26 and go to South Carolina, you just got to my church. It's right there at the Welcome Center. But my mother, for 9 years, I was pastor of Grace Baptist Church in Atlanta, South Carolina. I mentioned to you, I was Ed Vanover's pastor for a long time there and friend. 19 years ago, I resigned my church. I wasn't going to tell my mama. But I forgot to tell Linda that, and she told my mama. And my mama said, I'm going to kick him in the... Whatever, you just have to... You know, there's some of you people sitting right here in front of me tonight that your neighbors think y'all are crazy. I mean, y'all go to church Sunday mornings, Sunday night, Wednesday night, missions conference, revivals, family conferences, and they cannot figure out. They think we're gone. And not only that, not only do y'all come to church, y'all tithe. And you give offerings. And you give to missions. And they just can't imagine. But I think what I'm going to say is true. I know why you do it. Even all the world misunderstands you and throws rocks at you and criticizes you. I believe the reason you do it is you've understood this story. When you really love Jesus, you're going to do all you can to let him see that you love him. And everybody else may misunderstand you, but there's somebody who always understands. Jesus understood. And he said, leave this woman alone. Everywhere the gospel is preached all over the world, we're going to tell this story, and I'm doing it again tonight. You see, nothing that you give or I give to Jesus in love is ever wasted. John and Betty Stamm, how many of you know that name, John and Betty Stamm? They were martyred in China back in the 40s. Young missionaries, hadn't been there long, gave their lives there. Betty Stamm, I love poetry, and in a little mission book about their lives, there's a little short poem, and this is my conclusion tonight. Betty Stamm wrote just a few lines about this story, and she gave it the title, Spikenard, Very Precious. But she said it this way, in Simon's house in Bethany, the master sat at meat. Purity and strength and pity shone upon his wondrous face, and the hearts of all were burning at his words of heavenly grace. When a woman came and poured her precious ointment on his feet, fragrance as of eastern gardens sweetly lingered in the air, and the box that held the perfume, alabaster, exquisite, shattered, lay upon the floor, a rainbow curving in each bit, as a woman, kneeling, weeping, wiped his feet upon her hair. Then the disapproving murmurs the assembled guests gave vent, for the world cannot endure the wasting of a precious thing when it is a gift of utter consecration to the King. But a woman, loving greatly, kissed his feet and found content. I suggest to you, folk, that there's no contentment in the world like not just being saved, but loving him with all of your heart. And when we love him, that ought to affect everything, not everything we do, but even the way we do it. Dear Lord, I pray tonight you'd help us to learn from this story that we've read many times, but thank you for the love we see from this dear disciple who said, Lord, I love you so much. I want you to see how much I love you. And she gave the best that she had. And I pray you stir our hearts this evening in Jesus' name.